Good morning, everybody. Thanks for sticking around on a Friday morning, a beautiful day. Hopefully, you can enjoy the rest of the day after this meeting. I want to call to order the joint committee meeting of Civil Law Data Practices and the Transportation Committee.
Thanks for being here this morning again. Looks like Commissioner Doman is ready to go through the handout that we have in our packets, and I want to welcome her to the committee. And for the tape, the purposes today are to go over the commissioner's report on what they've found out with Real ID. So with that, go ahead and state your name for the record and continue on.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Good morning, members. My name is Mona Doman, and I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety, and we appreciate this opportunity to sit before you today to give you an overview of the Real ID implementation report that we completed over the last 2 weeks and turned into you all yesterday. I hope that you've had at least a little bit of time to look at it. I know it's a lot of information to digest, and our hope today is that we'll be able to help you understand the report better and answer any questions that you might have of the report. And moving forward, we want to be able to help you with any decisions that you decide to make. We attempted with this report to put it in a format that is most user-friendly for you as you make those decisions moving forward. The report is what we know as of yesterday about Real ID. I can tell you that we don't necessarily have any technical experts on Real ID in the Department of Public Safety. It is a work in progress. We're studying it as you all have been. And we anticipate that, or actually our hope is that we'll be able to answer all of your questions today, but if there are questions that come up that we can't answer, we will do our due diligence to get back to you as quickly as possible to make sure that you have answers to the questions in an expedient manner so that you can make decisions as you move forward. In addition to the report, we prepared a short PowerPoint presentation, and seated to my right is our Division Director of Driver and Vehicle Services, Dawn Olson, and she is going to walk you through the PowerPoint as an overview of the report, and then we'll stand for questions after that, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Go ahead, Ms. Olson.
Thank you. Today we're here to talk a little bit more specifically about the details that we defined in the report.
If you can introduce yourself for the tape.
I'm sorry. For the record, my name is Dawn Olson, and I'm the Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. Okay. So what is Real ID? The Real ID Act is a federal act that was enacted in 2005. It became federal law. The basis for the act was based on the 9/11 commission that recommended that secure identification was needed and standards needed to be set for insurance of sources of identification, such as driver's licenses. Homeland Security is the agency that sets the requirements for states to meet and be compliant with Real ID, with the Real ID Act. Standards for state driver's license and notification cards to be accepted are intended for federal purposes, such as boarding an airplane for domestic travel or entering secure federal facilities. So the DHS Real ID timetable. As was mentioned in the report, DHS now is allowing us until January 22nd of 2018 to use driver's licenses for non-compliant travel within states as a form of identification for domestic travel. Visitors to military bases and almost all federal facilities must present proper identification issued by Real ID compliant states or a state that has received an extension. At this time, Minnesota identification does not work for federal buildings. Starting January 22nd of 2018, passengers with a driver's license issued by a state that is still non-compliant with the Real ID Act or has not been granted an extension will need to show an alternative form of an acceptable identification for domestic or air travel. Passengers with a driver's license issued by a state that is compliant with Real ID or a state that has been issued an extension will be able to use their driver's license or identification card. Starting October 1 of 2020, every passenger will need a Real ID compliant license or an acceptable form of identification for domestic travel. So here are some of the costs associated with these timelines. If Real ID is implemented by October of 2016, the department has estimated $4.3 to $5.1 million investment. That breaks down into approximately $2 million of computer system programming, card costs from the vendor, approximately $160,000 to $200,000 to make the adjustments to the card, a $19.75 per driver's license agent or a DVS employee is required to have a background check and be fingerprinted, $300 per person for training of all DL office staff and DVS employees on Real ID procedures and security measures, and a 50 to 80 cent per save electronic verification. Save is an electronic verification that identifies the validity of immigration documents. In addition to the cost of programming in the legacy, this will also extend the implementation of MNLARS by at least 6 months due to the fact that we'll have to redirect staff back into the legacy system. The other areas to consider are if implementation was done by mid-2017, we are still working on the driver's license portion of MNLARS, so we would still need to do the same computer programming in the legacy system. Costs would essentially remain the same. However, we are also in the middle of redoing our driver's license card contract, so we're under a procurement process with our DL card vendor. So at this time, we can't speak specifically to what the price would be for the Real ID card, but we know by that time we would have a more definitive cost because the procurement process should be ended. So there would be no further discussion around the cost of the card. We'd be able to speak more of it in a real-time information. But again, we will still deal with the implications of changing staff and from the MNLARS project to the legacy system and have to save the consequences of delaying MNLARS. Our last option for today was to talk about implementation by January of 2018. The cost would be substantially different due to the fact that we would build these requirements into the MNLARS development phase. And so we wouldn't be putting time and effort into the legacy. We would be strictly be putting that time and effort into MNLARS. The annual costs run about $16,000 to $30,000. That would be based on the SAVE verification process. That's what I mentioned earlier on the immigrant document verification process that we would go through. There would be no card costs as legislative changes will be built into the new card contract. There would be no additional training costs for driver's license agents and DVS staff because it would be part of the MNLARS implementation training. And there would be no impact to MNLARS as Real ID would be part of the development of the new system. So these are decision points that we have determined. First is we need a law authorizing us for implementation, to go forward with implementation. We need to have an implementation date. We need to have a decision on whether to issue a non-compliant card. We need to have statutory changes as was defined in the report for Real ID implementation. We need expedited rulemaking authority for DPS to implement Real ID, and we would need funding. For the DPS-DVS next steps, we would need to review our current business processes to ensure that we were working in compliance with what Real ID requirements would be. We would need to continue our discussions with DHS. We've had some discussions over the last couple weeks, but these discussions would need to continue to handle the kind of questions that we feel we have yet to be answered. We would need additional research for legislators and staff to be able to respond appropriately to the questions. And we will need to engage deputy registrars and DL agent staff. We have made contact with the DL agents. We've told them that our plan is to include them, but we haven't had the time to be able to engage them directly at this point. But we've said that we've had communications with them about them with DHS, and that we will continue to have that discussion once we have more information. So that's our presentation for today, and we will happily take questions from the committee.
Thank you. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you so much for the presentation. It's nice to start getting some information here, et cetera. But my question revolves around the cost if implemented before 2018. And I'm not, a couple of questions in regards to that. I'm not sure why we would need to extend the final MNLARS implementation by 6 months when we put $2 million in for that additional computer programming costs. It seems to me, you know, I could understand if we weren't adding any more money for programming costs, then you would extend it. But if you're adding more personnel costs for it, it seems to me you ought to be able to make that up. Am I missing something here?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, no, I think it's just a clarification point. The programming that we would have to do with the more eminent timelines would require programming in our current legacy system. So that's the differentiation. We are not at this point doing any changes to the legacy system because MNLARS is coming. So we've directed all our resources onto MNLARS development, knowing that the legacy system would be retired. If we need to do this sooner than the MNLARS timeline that we've set forth, we would have to bring in additional staff with other skill sets, staff that know and understand the legacy system, which is a little more challenging to find staff that meet that criteria, and we'd have to deploy them working on legacy so we can meet the requirements with the current legacy system and basically set aside any additional work on MNLARS as the timing requires us to do. So it's the nature of the two different systems that we're dealing with right now that drive the difference in the cost.
Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But I still don't understand where the $2 million computer system programming cost is. I assume that would be for the legacy system because MNLARS would be able to develop it once it's done anyway. And if we've got the cost built in for additional staff to do that, why would it delay MNLARS, which, in my opinion, has already been delayed because of other issues in regards to the department and others that, and I know that's water under the bridge, but I don't understand if we're adding $2 million to the project for the programming part of getting this done with legacy, why it would extend MNLARS when that really needs to get up and running.
Ms. Olson?
The primary reason when we were targeting and putting this together was our concern about the reallocation of staff. And that's the primary emphasis of this, is directing staff from where they're currently working now over to legacy. We don't have the funds right now to direct staff to a legacy type project. We have funds to keep them on the MNLARS project.
Okay. Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But Ms. Olson, you just put $2 million into the cost for that piece, so obviously the money's going to be there for the additional staff. So either it almost looks like you're double dipping here because the MNLARS program is set to run with its current budget, and you're wanting $2 million more for programming cost here, which to me would indicate that you're going to have that additional staff that you need to hire in order to do the legacy. So, I mean, it seems like it's one or the other, not both.
And I see that we have an additional testifier to the testifiers table that might be able to answer the question or clarify it better. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. And
thank you, Madam Chair. Paul Meekin. I'm the CIO for the Department of Public Safety. I work in the Minute organization.
Go ahead if you want to take a stab at answering the question.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. What this comes down to is the expertise both in the technologies and in the DBS system. So we have put all of our IT capabilities, all the staff who understand DBS systems into the MNLARS project right now. And they're funded with that special revenue account from MNLARS. So if we're going to move those staff from MNLARS over to work on the legacy system, we have to have a different funding source to do that. But we only have really one set of staff who understand these systems. And in this short time frame, our only choice really is to grab people who currently understand the systems and move them. There's no time to really procure additional staff, train them, and get the work done in that time frame that's been put forth.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it sounds then that MNLARS will save $2 million then by moving the staff over and getting it funded this way. Because we still got the same number of staff, and you're moving 6 months. And I'm not going to belabor the point. It just seems a little strange. My question would then go around the other way. So what would it cost us as a state to say we want MNLARS implemented by January 1, 2017? What additional staff and costs we need in order to do that? Because it seems to me if we're spending this kind of money, it would be better for us to get MNLARS up and running earlier rather than delaying it. And I'm just curious.
Mr. Mika?
Madam Chair, thank you. Our current project plan is that we're working on the motor vehicle services part of the system right now. So all of our staff are dedicated to that right now with our production date set for the end of this year. We have not put our full plan together yet on the driver services side. That's starting later this year with an implementation date in early calendar 18. And so it's just that we're not working on the driver services part of the system at this point.
Representative Petersburg?
Thank you. Just last follow-up. I understand what your deadlines are. My question was, what would it take for us to get the MNLARS system up and running earlier from your perspective? Do you have any kind of ballpark figure?
Mr. Meekin or?
Madam Chair. That is something that we would have to research to figure that out, to switch our effort over to the driver's side and get that done by January.
Right. It seems to me that might be a better route to go to if you have some flexibility to shift from doing what you're doing over to getting this up and running. Representative Hornstein.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions around this the implementation issue and our legislative role in that. Are there consequences in terms of how the feds are viewing this if we don't act this session? Are they kind of watching our authorization process here? And what can the department do, if anything, on that? And do you think that we'll be able to be able to advance anything on your planning process if we don't act in these next 4 weeks, I suppose? Like, what are the consequences of inaction, I suppose, if
Ms. Olson or Commissioner Dolman?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, and members. As you know, Governor Dayton has sent a letter to the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Johnson asking for an extension. I spoke with DHS this morning to find out if I could find out when they anticipate that extension might be granted or not. If the extension is, and they couldn't tell me, they don't know yet. The request is in the process out in Washington, and they don't know when the secretary will make that decision. If Minnesota does not get an extension, then we are in a situation where on January 22nd of 2018, our Minnesota driver's license will be a non-compliant driver's license, and members of the our citizens will not be able to board commercial aircraft.
Representative Hornstein.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. So, but more specifically, what would there be any consequence to inaction before the end of the session in terms of the second phase of what we envision here? Is this something that could be put off? I don't think it's optimal to do that, but we have 4 weeks to do something we said we would do.
Commissioner Dolman, if you know the answer to that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Hornstein, and members. I'll try to answer that. January 22nd of 2018, without an extension, is the date that Minnesota residents with Minnesota driver's licenses will not be able to board commercial aircraft for travel. And so if the legislature takes no action this session, then the time crunch will be for the 2017 session and the time crunch for our department to implement whatever you decide. If you decide in 2018, will be a shorter time frame to do so.
One last question.
Hornstein.
So if you have this limited window then next year, does that affect our ability to either financially or policy-wise to get done what clearly we have to get done by 2018.
Commissioner Doman or Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I think the information you're asking more specifically about is in the PowerPoint about the decision points that need to be determined. From my discussions with DHS, they're primarily looking for a law that allows us to implement Real ID. And once they have that authorization, they will work with us more specifically to grant the extension, which as long as we can say we have a law that allows us to implement and we are committed to implementing Real ID, they will work with us on the extension, which is kind of the stopgap for us to be able to handle what's coming the 1st of January 2018.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Real quickly, Representative Lucero, to that point, since we're on that point.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And to the question I think Representative Horstein is getting at, and correct me if I'm incorrect, but my understanding of the timeline is that we have until October of 2018 in order to apply for an extension. And we will only be able to get that extension if we repeal the current prohibition on the implementation. And then enforcement of not being able to fly doesn't occur until October of 2020. So we have until 2018 to get that extension filed.
Ms. Olson, respond to that.
Yeah, let me just clarify the dates a little bit more, Madam Chair and members. What we've been told is we don't have an extension now, but we've been given until January 22nd to use our current non-compliant card for domestic travel. It doesn't allow us into federal buildings, but what DHS has said is they need correspondence from us that simply states we have the authority to move forward with implementation. We don't have to be issuing, but we're moving forward with implementation, that we are committed to moving forward with the implementation, and that we have applied for the SAVE verification process. That kind of correspondence is, from their words, enough information that they would grant us the extension for us to work toward the compliance. That will go into effect January 22nd of 2018. The enforcement part is what you mentioned is just as that. They will start enforcing non-compliant states in October of 2020.
And just staff is reminding me in a previous hearing that we had that Jamie Tincher, the governor's chief of staff, went on record as saying the main thing is this, that we repeal the prohibition on the planning, which is what we've already done. And she was very, very confident that at that point we would be granted the extension. So hopefully that should be coming anyway. I'm going to go on down the list. We have quite a few folks. Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Commissioner and Ms. Olson. So I'm looking at page 16 of the bigger document that they gave, and it appears to me that current enhanced driver's license that Minnesota offers to people as an option meets all of the requirements from air travel to entering a military base to entering federal facilities to entering nuclear power plants, ID purposes, lawful driving privileges, and the rest. So the question I have is, if Minnesota does nothing this session or next or any session in between October 20th of 2020, will the enhanced driver's license continue past that date to work for all of these items that you outline in the table here?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members, yes, that is correct.
Representative Drazkowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Olson, it sounds like we already have Real ID. The question to me, or question appears to me to be, whether Real ID is an option that Minnesota citizens engage in on their own, or whether it's one that the legislature and the executive branch force upon Minnesotans through an ID and driver's license system. Is that accurate?
Ms. Olson?
Yeah. Madam Chair and members of the committee, what we're missing with the enhanced driver's license as it is currently today is it is not AMVA compliant. A Real ID card is AMVA compliant.
Could you explain to, I'm sorry, could you explain to us what AMBA compliant is? Is that an acronym for something?
Sorry, yes, Madam Chair and members of the committee. AMBA stands for the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. So it's a national organization that sets standards for states to use for implementation, guidance, recommendations of various sorts. So AMBA has set forth standards for states to use to comply with the Real ID regulations. They've done their extensive research and additional work to be able to assist DHS and states to understand what compliance needs are for the states to have to follow. I don't have the specifics on what that compliance means, just to know that the EDL today as it stands is not AMBA compliant.
Do you think that would be... Oh, go ahead, Representative Draskowski. You have a follow-up.
Go ahead, Madam Chair.
I was just going to say, do you think one of the only things that's missing from maybe from the enhanced driver's license would be just to say, because don't they have to have a star either in the right or left-hand corner, and then it has to say Real ID compliant or something to that effect? Would it maybe be something as simple as that?
Madam Chair and members, that's probably one of the criteria. I don't know if there's additional that I'd have to do a little bit more research on.
All right. But Representative Draskowski, I'm sorry, butted in. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And so, Ms. Olson, so just to be clear, we will be, after October 20th, if we do nothing between now and October 20th of 2020, we will be those in Minnesota who opt to pay the extra $5 or $6 or whatever it is, for an enhanced driver's license. I realize that there's only 18 sites or whatever, and that might be something we would have to address, but that those would be available to people and we would be compliant with federal law from that point going forward as far as we can see now, or at least the way federal law is written today. Is that correct?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members, that is correct.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Olson, I have a question about the cost for implementation. You have as a line item here $300 per person for training of all the agency and staff and everything else. What is the total on that? You have any idea?
I'm sorry, Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we estimated about 1,000 staff members would have to be trained.
Representative Uglum.
Thank you. Follow-up. So, really, so you've got 300 people that are being trained at $1,000 a copy. Don't you do normal training in the course of normal operations over there? I mean, why do we have to incur this increased cost for training? I'm sure you must train your agents and everybody on a regular basis for numerous things. Why is this there?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members, the reason the cost is as it is because this would be very specialized training, and we would have to do this in a very short time frame. So more than likely, we would not have the staff internally to be able to set this up and get this training out the door statewide in a timely fashion.
Representative Uglum?
Madam Chair, follow-up. So, Ms. Olson, are you telling me that you're subbing the training out to a third-party individual or corporation?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members, I can't say specifically yet. We would have to think about that for planning purposes. I don't have a specific answer for you at this time.
Ms. Doman, would you like to answer that?
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative Uglum, and members. We put this report together in 2 weeks, and I think that the best answer to that is these are estimates for what we anticipate. We believe that this training will be specialized, and in addition to the ongoing training that we put staff through on a regular basis, we have not contemplated yet how we might go about making sure that training happens, whether it's a third-party vendor or whether it's internal, but it would be in addition to what we do on an ongoing basis.
Madam Chair.
Representative Uglum.
Well, I just hope that you'll be cognizant of the fact that with MNLARS and the cost overruns that we've incurred there and now additional costs here, that we can keep these things to a minimum, because it seems to me that, you know, it's a million here, a million there, and pretty soon it's $50 million, which we have overruns in MNLARS. So I think we need to really watch the taxpayers' dollars. Thank you.
I do have a question, and the estimates that you've given us, does that include, so you could go to any driver license outlet in the state of Minnesota and get a real ID? Do your costs include that?
Madam Chair and members, yes, it does.
Okay, great. Thank you. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A question perhaps for staff. The balance, the current balance in the driver and vehicle services operating account, and if the funds in that account could be used for the implementation fees.
Mr. Lee.
Mr. Chair, or Madam Chair and Representative Smith, currently the balance is in the two driver and vehicle services accounts, which are special revenue funds that are funded by fees paid into driver and vehicle services when you do a transaction, for example, tab renewals or exchanging the title on a vehicle. Currently, there's a $4 million balance in the driver services account. And when you add in reserves for working capital and building contingencies, it's about $14 million that will carry forward into fiscal year 17, assuming the legislature doesn't already appropriate it. And there's about an $8.5 million balance in the vehicle services funds before you include a $5 million two-month working capital set aside that will carry forward into fiscal 17. However, that $8 million in the vehicle services account would mostly be spent by a legislative appropriation in fiscal 17. So bottom line, there's about $14 million balance that will carry forward in the driver services account with about four of that unencumbered that is not part of a set aside for contingency or emergencies.
Representative Smith.
Madam Chair, thank you. To the Commissioner, thank you for this comprehensive report and the timeliness of it. It's very much appreciated. And then also, Madam Chair, an additional question for any of the testifiers. For the financial numbers that were just stated, is it their opinion that those funds could be used for the implementation costs?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members, we haven't looked at it that closely yet. We do know that funds were taken out of the HUTD funds to pay our plate production, which was approximately $8 million. That's been factored into fiscal year 16, and I believe the numbers that are being shown today do not factor in the $8 million that is needed for fiscal year 17.
Mr. Lee, you have any knowledge of that? Or
Madam Chair, the $8 million, it was about $8.5 million that comes out of the Vehicle Services Fund. That is a kind of less an appropriation that the HUTD would have paid for costs, I believe, relating to MnCorp. And instead, that is the HUTD is not paying into the Driver Services Fund. So essentially, the Driver Services Fund is paying its share of the legislative appropriation rather than transfer out of the Highway User Tax Distribution Fund. But that doesn't relate to the driver. That's relating to the Vehicle Services Fund, not the Driver Services Fund. And the Driver Services Fund is the one where there's about a $14 million balance.
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair, I would have to take a closer look at that because those numbers don't resonate right now, but we could take a closer look at that to verify that information.
All right. Thank you. We would appreciate you getting back to us on that and, mm-hmm. and clarifying from your end of it. Representative Smith?
That is all, Madam Chair. Thank you.
All right. Representative Lesh. No, wait. Right, Representative Johnson. Representative Lesh, you're on deck. Sorry. Take out.
Madam Chair, just a couple things. Was there... You mentioned a little earlier that without the real ID, we'd no longer be able to board airplanes. I just want a clarification on that. Mm-hmm. In 2018, our current driver's license, our standard driver's license, would not be able to be used to get into the security areas at the airport, but an enhanced driver's license would, or somebody that has a passport. Is that correct?
Commissioner Dolman.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson. That is correct, unless we have an extension, and we don't currently have an extension.
Representative Johnson?
Madam Chair, I just want to clarify that the Minnesotans are not going to be stopped from getting on airplanes, but there is alternatives. And if I have a couple other questions.
You bet. Representative Johnson.
Commissioner Dolan, during the presentation, it was mentioned that our contracts with the supplier for the driver's license is in negotiations right now. I hope that in the negotiations they're getting the in place right now, because apparently the current driver's license, the materials used for our current driver's license are not compliant. So during the negotiations, are you looking at getting the material that's compliant with the real ID for our new driver's license, whether we implement or not? So if we do implement, we don't have an extra cost at that point.
Commissioner Dolman.
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson and members, we are in the currently in the procurement process, so I cannot speak specifically to that process, but we are aware of that, and we are taking that into consideration as we work towards a new card for Minnesota.
Representative Johnson.
Yeah, I do hope that that is in the plan to save some state tax dollars. And then also in because of the material that our current cards are, and some other issues, in 2020 when full implementation comes in, will our enhanced driver's license be compliant at that point without the real ID, with the real ID requirements?
Madam Chair, Representative Johnson and members, the Department of Homeland Security has indicated that our enhanced driver's license or ID card is an acceptable form of a document, and that we have not had any indication that that will change in 2020.
Representative Johnson?
Thank you, Ms.
There's also another way that people could fly and get into these facilities, too, and that's by carrying around their birth certified copies of their birth certificates. They could present all those other documents that are supporting documents to the real ID. They could just carry those with them, is my understanding. Correct me if I'm wrong. Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair, I guess I'm not aware of that. I can certainly verify that for
okay,
you.
I appreciate that. Thank you. Representative Lesh.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question relates to, you know, either Ms. Olson or Commissioner Dolman. I understand, so this was originally passed as federal law in 2005, and then we had a drop-dead deadline last year, I think, which then they extended again, and I'm not sure if there were other deadlines or indicators that we had to comply in between there. Do you have a sense of how many times the federal government said that we had to do this and then kind of move the goalposts back a little bit?
Commissioner Dolman or Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members, I wouldn't have that information off the top of my head. You know, we're just kind of new into getting these details, but we can certainly research that and find that out.
Representative Lesh, I know that they've delayed it at least three times.
So thank you, Madam Chair. And if that's true, Ms. Olson or Commissioner Dolman, why is this really important that we're for sure going to have to do it this time? I mean, do you really know? Are we going to go to the bank on this or what? Because I hate having to do the old, you know, dance. Anyway, that's my question.
Commissioner Dolman.
Madam Chair, Representative Blesch, and members, I know what you know, and that is that they have said January 22nd, no, of 2018 is the date, unless we have an extension, and then October of 2020 is the date if we are not in compliance. And that's what I know from the Department of Homeland Security at this time.
Representative Lesh?
Well, Madam Chair, I mean, there's some folks in this body who don't care, right, because they want us to comply with this immediately. It doesn't matter. Then there are other folks in this body who have very serious concerns about the direction we're moving with a type of identification like this. And I think whether or not we call the federal government's bluff is really sort of a legitimate question if they delayed it three times. I mean, just a couple months ago, they swore that they couldn't crack the iPhone, and you know everyone was going to die because they couldn't crack the iPhone. And then within a month, they said, "Oh yeah, no, sorry, we actually can crack it." No question about it, the federal government is getting better at public relations. They're trying to, but I just don't want the state of Minnesota to be made the fool to have bent over backwards and then things change again. So. No other questions, just that statement, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Lesh. Representative Howe.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and welcome to the committee, Commissioner. And I guess I've got two questions, and one hopefully is fairly simple. It's a question from one of my constituents that said if they're concerned that they're going to get their driver's license here in 2016 or 2017, and then they're going to, when this new Real ID comes available, even though they won't be due for a new driver's license, in order to get one of these, they're going to have to renew. And are they going to get refunded the cost of the original one? How's the cost thing going to work out, or haven't we addressed that yet?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we haven't specifically addressed that yet. Part of that depends on the implementation date that is determined and decided. We do know that we will look at our business processes and make some accommodations around renewal periods for people, either backing that up so people can renew earlier than the current situation is, to be able to accommodate this transition period.
Representative Howell.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My next question comes to I see on page 4 that we're not only asking for expedited rulemaking authority, which I can understand in this Titan piece, but I'm a little concerned about the express rulemaking authority, because in my experience here, that's just closing the blinds and kind of doing it without public input, and that really raises a concern when we start shutting the public out of the process. So can you explain to us why? Not only I can understand the expedited, but I've got some real concerns about going the express rulemaking authority. Can you explain that, why that's required?
Ms. Olson, if you could explain what express rulemaking is, because I've heard of expedited, but I've never heard of express. So,
Madam Chair and members of the committee, it's the definition of the authority that we're given is expressed, and we aren't making any recommendations other than we will work with whatever authority that we're given for the rulemaking process.
Okay, Representative Howe. Thank you. Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question relates to the interaction between the timeline and the cost. So it looks like from your presentation that kind of the later that Real ID is implemented, assuming that it is, then the cheaper it is. I'm just seeing that, you know, $4.3 to $5.1 million in 2016, 2017, and then it drops to just $16,000 to $30,000 annually in 2018. So my question is, if we don't address this session, and there was talk earlier about it could be addressed next session, how, if at all, does that change the timeline and the cost? Would it be then we could do it in January 2019 and still have that, you know, low cost of $16,000 to $30,000 and still be fine, and we'd be okay on January 22nd of 2018 because we'd presumably get an extension, because by that point the law would... I think you understand what I'm asking.
Ms. Olson, or I'm sorry, Commissioner Dolman.
Madam Chair and Representative Pinto, what we really need is an implementation date. To your question, for us to look at the lower costs for an later implementation date, we need to be able to work the process into the development of our MNLAR system. Without knowing that we're going to be implementing, we likely wouldn't be developing the system with Real ID in mind, because we wouldn't have that authority from you. So an implementation date, whatever you decide that date to be, it would be helpful this session.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I should probably note, per what you said, there was a question earlier about training costs, and I'm noting one of the big savings is that there wouldn't need to be separate training costs, because the employees, it looks like, would be getting trained on MNLARs, and this would just be part of that. So the question that came earlier from one of my colleagues, Representative Petersburg, I'm not sure. So I guess, Commissioner, then, you said it'd be helpful to have the date this session, the implementation date. My question is, how unhelpful would it be to not have it this session? Like, can you quantify that, you know, financially and time-wise? Because I'm thinking you're going to be putting MNLARs in place. You won't have this. Do we then pretty much lose the chance of having only a $16,000 to $30,000 cost at that point? Like, how does that affect this if you don't get this session?
Ms. Olson.
No, Madam Chair and members, to be able to develop this in Menlars is where the cost savings comes from.
Right.
If we can put these requirements into the development cycle for Menlars, that's where the true cost savings is going to come from. If we have to spend time on a shorter time frame and put the cost into the legacy, that's what's driving a big part of those costs. If you choose to do nothing this session, there's really no impact to us, except the implications of not being able to have whatever the decision is around the extension is probably the main consequence, whether it's passed or not passed. But the cost for us would not change. It's really the implementation date is going to drive which system do we have to make these programming changes into. If we have to make them sooner and we don't have the funding that's necessarily established for the legacy system now, we would have to get the funding and redirect our time and effort into the legacy system. If we hold off and we can factor these changes and requirements and basically spread out some of the urgency of getting this implemented, that just mitigates some of the costs that we would have to take on.
Representative Pinto.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So if I'm understanding you correctly, if we're going to implement REAL-ID at some point, if it does get implemented, and we don't set an implementation date this session, then because we won't be able to take advantage of the Menlars system being implemented, that will cost taxpayers $4 to $5 million. We could pick a January 1st, 2018 implementation date now and not cost that money, be $16,000 to $30,000 annually. Or we could wait, implement it later, and then we have to pay $4 to $5 million or, you know, approximately that cost doing it later. Is that correct?
Ms. Olson.
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
I have a question. So Representative Howell asked the question, the constituents are concerned that if they buy a driver's license within the next year or so, that they're going to have to then buy another one when implementation comes by. So in order to not have that problem, we would have to ask the department, hypothetically, to be up and running to implement new Real ID cards in October of this year. And so my question is that even a possibility with the department? Would they even be able to have it ready to go by October 22nd or whatever the date is this year? Commissioner Doman.
Madam Chair, we've been told by the card vendor currently that they would need a decision by May 15th in order for us to be able to work towards issuance on October 1st of 2016.
Okay. And a question related to that, are you looking at a vendor that's done Real ID in other states so that we're not recreating the wheel here? Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, because we're in the procurement process, vendors know and understand, you know, our requirements as they exist today, but it's also future enhancements as we would on any RFP that, you know, we have a current state and a future state. So part of the vendor selection process as well is, you know, their criteria and what they've done in other states and how they've accommodated this. We know this exists in 24 other states, so it's becoming more of a viable type of activity for card vendors.
And so I have a stack here because I'd wanted to know, you know, what other states are doing. And so I've got a stack here from the state of Texas. And in there, it goes all through their process of implementing Real ID. And then there's also included in here information from one of their vendors. If that's helpful to you in any way, certainly I can pass this along to you. We'll go on down the line. Representative Vogel, oh, did he leave? Oh, there he is. I was thinking you were sitting over there.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Back to we talked a little bit, or Representative Peterson talked a little bit about the additional programming cost, and I'm still a little confused there. My sense would be that you're going to have to hire extra staff, so you would be running parallel because you would hire new people to work on the old COBOL system or whatever, bringing that up to date, but you could still keep running parallel on the MNLARS, or am I misinterpreting that somehow?
Ms. Olson, or excuse me, Mr. Meekin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Member. So the resources that are knowledgeable about the DVS business processes and the DVS systems are all invested in MNLARS right now. We would pull the number of resources needed out of MNLARS to work on changing the legacy system, and that would dramatically slow down the efforts on MNLARS.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I understand that, but I'm wondering then, why do we need the extra $2 million? Because we're already paying those people.
Mr. Meeker.
Madam Chair. Yeah. Representative. It is, in fact, the special revenue account for MNLARS cannot be used for other purposes. So we have to have different funding to pay for those staff.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So it still would seem to me that we're putting $2 million into the pool someplace, and that somebody else would be hired, or where's the money going? I guess I apologize for not knowing all of these special funding sources. I'm just looking at it and saying, we're putting $2 million in. Where are the $2 million additional going?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative. So the changes that we make to the legacy system will be short-lived, right? That system will be retired when MNLARS comes online. But we'll take that effort, we'll put it into the legacy system, we'll build that out, then we'll be retiring that when MNLARS goes live. We still have to do all the work that we have scheduled to be done in MNLARS. No changes there.
Representative Vogel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So the other thing that I'm looking at then is that if we do it by July of 17, we spend an extra $2 million. If we do it by January of 18, only 6 months later, we save the whole $2 million. Would it be possible to speed up the MNLARS by putting the resources there rather than going back and working on the antiquated system?
Mr. Meekin?
Madam Chair, Representative, I think your question is, can we put additional resources on the MNLARS to speed that up? Is that your question? If I understand your question correctly, the pool of resources that we have right now who understand the DVS systems and the technology, that's a set population of people that we have. And so we're just talking about carving them out and putting them on legacy for a time being, and then putting them back on MNLARS after those changes have been made. There's no net increase in this process of knowledgeable people.
Representative Vogel.
One more. Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess just from a business perspective, what I'm looking at here and thinking is, okay, if I had to speed something up by 6 months and I had an extra $2 million, maybe I could go out and hire some consultants to come in and assist me or whatever. We would get a better value than putting it into a legacy system, and maybe you could even speed it before July 17th. And just looking at that as an alternative, rather than taking the $2 million and basically wasting it, could we look at a proposal? How quickly could we move up the implementation of MNLARS by using that $2 million to hire outside resources to consult with us and make sure that this thing gets done as quickly as possible? Thank you.
Thank you. Does anybody want to respond to that at the testifiers' table? Is that a possibility, Mr. Meekin?
Well, Madam Chair, Representative, I take is similar to the question before, which we'll take offline to research the possibility of working on driver services now instead of a motor vehicle part of the system.
Right. Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just going off of what Representative Vogel was just speaking about, just to make sure I fully understand. So earlier this week in Transportation Committee, we had a discussion regarding MNLARS. And in that testimony, we heard that the current system is approximately 30 years old. And you're standing up MNLARS, the new IT infrastructure, and then eventually we'll be decommissioning the existing infrastructure. And so this $2 million, as I understand it, is to take and devote to the legacy system, which is going to be decommissioned. And then essentially, so we're going to spend $2 million on a system we're bringing down. Is that how I understand it?
Ms. Olson or Mr. Meekin?
Yeah. Madam Chair, Representative, that's correct.
Representative Lucero.
Madam Chair, that is the height of squandering of taxpayer dollars, in my opinion. But I have several questions here.
Go ahead.
Earlier in the testimony today, we heard that the Real ID driver's license will be offered at DMVs all over the state. And as we're aware, some of those DMVs are county-run or state-run, and some of them are private party-run. And then, so my first question is, regarding this, do the cost estimates that you have, the $5 million or so, do they include the training, the equipment upgrades, everything that's necessary to roll out Real ID for those agents, for the DMV locations that are not state-owned or county-owned? Is the state absorbing those costs?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the main cost we factored in for the DL agents is training at this point. The other cost that we know to be a factor is going to be the background checks and fingerprinting, and we've identified that cost in the report. But at this time, I don't know of any other costs. We did fold those costs into our total bottom line number, though.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And it may be in the report, and I just didn't see it. My understanding is that when it comes to the source documents that residents will bring to obtain, validate their, there's various documents. One of the requirements, there's two options for retention of those source documents. The first is, my understanding is that if those source documents are retained in an electronic version that could be scanned in, however it's done, the retention period is for 10 years. If the source documents are photocopied and then retained as hard copies, the retention period is 7 years. So in your report here, do you estimate the cost needed for either one of those retention methods?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members, we tried to factor in several costs that would roll into that bottom line total. And so the cost of storage, yes, would be included in that.
Representative Lucero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So then what would you, which of those two methods did you factor in? The storage of the hard copies or storage of the electronic versions?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we've looked at both versions because our current process is like that. We scan documents. We also take paper documents in, but ultimately they turn into a scanned image, and that's how we store our documents going forward. We at this point would consider that process to stay the same. So that process would stay very similar. So we know what our process looks like today, and we would carry that process forward. It probably, more than likely, would change under MNLARS, that we wouldn't necessarily be taking in paper documents, but images would be scanned at the point of contact with the customer.
Representative Lucero.
Madam Chair, I guess I'm confused in terms of, you just mentioned the current process to take copies. Madam Chair, didn't we hear earlier, was it late last year, in one of the Data Privacy Commission, didn't we hear that no requirement to make photocopies of source documents to retain them at all?
I think that was an answer to DVS that we really never got clarification on, because the statute just says that you have to present those documents. It doesn't say that a copy has to be made.
Okay. Madam Chair, so then if the recommendation potentially would be the electronic version of the retention of those source documents, and if Minnesota residents can obtain Real ID at any of the DMV locations statewide, how do you propose to retain those? Is the storage of those electronic going to be at each of the locations, or is there going to be a centralized system whereby there has to be a transfer of all of those digital images of those very sensitive source documents?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I appreciate the questions because I understand the sensitivity. Unfortunately, I don't have the detail for you at this time, but it will be research that we'll continue to do to come up with a viable plan around the security of those documents, because that is first and foremost for us.
Representative Lucero?
Madam Chair, and the security is absolutely one concern, but another concern is the cost. Because if you have an estimate in there for the cost, storing them in a decentralized model at each of the locations versus storing them in a centralized model, that's obviously going to have an impact on the cost. One of my extreme concerns is with the data sharing of the database or databases. Could you speak to the state-to-state sharing of the Real ID database?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members, The current process that we have for driver's license is we have three verification systems that we communicate with. We don't share data. We simply provide data and get a message back if that data is appropriate, accurate, or if there's any issues with that. And that is what we do for the problem driver pointer systems. That's not a state-to-state. That's a national. That's with the commercial driver's license system, a verification process, as well as the SSOLV, Social Security. The only change that we would add to the Real ID is the SAVE verification process, which is very similar. It's a messaging system. It's not sharing anything more than what the customer has provided us at the time of licensing, so we can verify that the documents that they're providing us are true and appropriate documents.
Representative Lucero?
Madam Chair, thank you. So under Real ID, then, you're saying that there would not be a state-to-state data sharing?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, that is our understanding.
Okay.
Representative Lucero.
Madam Chair, and I do see in the report here on page 7 under the verifications section, there is a sentence that says, Real ID would not require state-to-state data sharing. Then if I flip it over to the next page on page 8, under the Real ID required verification section, it reads, Real ID implementation, let me skip down. In addition, the state-to-state data exchange will likely require a software application. So on page 7, it says there wouldn't be a state-to-state data sharing. And then on page 8, it says there would. So I'm confused by the report self-contradicting itself. I think it's very clear that there would be a state-to-state data sharing. I have select pages of the Real ID rule here. And in here, there are several instances or references to the hub, to queries and messaging system, et cetera, et cetera. So I'm very concerned about that. Madam Chair, I do understand there will be an opportunity for testifiers later on here. I do have some handouts that I will have questions on regarding further detail on the current hub or the proposed hub or et cetera, et cetera. So I will save those questions for another testifier, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you. Representative, Ms. Olson, did you have any response to that? I'll give you an opportunity.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, not specifically at this time. I'd rather go back and research that.
All right, very good. Representative Mason.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and to the testifiers. I think we all appreciate that you've been given a job that's very... that involves a lot of controversy here. So just know, we know that. It doesn't make it the discussion any easier, though. I just want to get a couple of things clarified. You said the governor has applied for the extension, and is that extension based just on the fact that we've repealed the prohibition for the agency to work on the implementation of Real ID, or is that based on the legislature setting a date of implementation?
Ms. Wilson.
Madam Chair.
Oh, go ahead. Commissioner Tolman.
I don't have the governor's letter in front of me. I would be happy to get a copy of that to all of you. Once the prohibition was lifted, that is when the governor sent the letter of request for the extension, because it allowed us to begin the planning. And the hope is that because we can plan for potential implementation of Real ID, the hope is that they would take that into consideration and potentially grant that extension.
Representative Mason.
Okay, thank you. And okay, so the way I'm going to go forward on that, so okay, if that's all, the repeal is really what's behind the letter right now, and we're waiting for an answer, then that would give us the opportunity to put this out till 2018.
Ms. Olson.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Next on the list, Representative Chad Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Question more regarding the seniors. I know right now you got to get a new license every 4 years, and I think with the Real ID, it would be the same thing. They have senior identification right now that don't expire. Mm-hmm. Would Real ID, would their license no longer be valid then, and they would have to get a new license every 4 years?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, that would depend on whether the state goes with a one- or two-tier system. If it's a one tier, then yes, seniors would have to get a new ID every 4 years.
Representative Anderson.
Okay, thank you. Yeah, that was the next question. If the seniors don't want to fly and don't want to use it, their current ID would not be valid then. And they would, if it was the one-tier system, they'd have to get the real ID.
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members, yes, that's correct.
Okay.
Representative Anderson?
That's good.
Okay. Representative Mark Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I've got the easiest question for the commissioner of the day. The all-time easiest. I've got a one-month-old Minnesota driver's license. It's not even an enhanced driver's license. It's just regular. I'm cheap. To the commissioner, what is the primary function of this document?
Commissioner Dolman.
Madam Chair, Representative Mark Anderson. That is a driving privilege card.
Representative Anderson.
That was my point, Madam Chair. This little document has evolved over our lifetime, our parents' lifetime. This thing used to just be a piece of paper without even a picture on it. It never really was an ID. It was just a paper that says, hey, you passed a driver's test. Lucky you. Congratulations, you can drive in Minnesota. Now it's used for ID, and now this thing is supposed to be upgraded to a nationally recognized document that'll supposedly get you on board an airplane. I don't like those kind of threats. I didn't even get an enhanced license. So I could have, but I still have my passport. I've got my global ID. There's so many ways to get on board an airplane, if that's really your choice or your desire. My point is, it seems like we're going down this road. I'm following up with what Representative Drazkowski and with Representative Brian Johnson had to say earlier, that if an enhanced ID is all it takes to get on board an airplane, why are we mucking around with all these discussions of let's prolong this out for a couple more years, or it's going to cost $3, $4, $5 million to do this or that? Why are we even discussing this today if we can just shut the whole discussion down and go home? Nothing's really going to happen if you show up to the airport with an enhanced ID. That's what the impression I'm getting. And if that's really, again, what the problem is everybody wants to get on board an airplane. Even Mr. Killian up there, I think he even rides on board airplanes. But the point is that this is a threat, a government-to-government threat. I really don't appreciate that from the federal government. If we already have a means to accomplish what we have by using an enhanced ID, why don't we just stop there for now? We've got a couple more years to work with these people out in Washington. So that's just a comment.
Thank you. I'm wondering if the department could get us an estimate of what it would cost just to use the enhanced ID as the real ID. I think that would be helpful information to have for the committees here and for the entire legislature. And also what you think an individual, if we go with a... if we come up with our own new real ID, what the cost of that driver's license or identification card would cost compared to if we already have an enhanced ID and the supporting documents are basically the same for both the real ID and the enhanced, what would be, would it drive down the cost then of an enhanced ID if it were to be implemented statewide as our real ID, if you understand what I'm trying to get at? Is that clear or not as, is it clear as mud? Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair, I think I understood what you were looking for. It's really more the comparison of what would be the ultimate cost is sticking with what we currently have on the enhanced DL versus what a real ID would cost. We can look at that.
Okay.
Like I said, the thing we just have to be cautious of is because of the procurement process that we're in, but we could at least give you some understanding of if there would be a price increase.
Okay. Thank you. That would be very helpful. Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifiers, if they could state again if there's no date chosen for implementation on Real ID, what is the completion date for the LARS system?
Okay, yes. Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, Our schedule right now is to put the motor vehicle functionality into production by the end of this year. And the driver services functionality would go in the first part of 2018.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, so if an implementation date of Real ID was selected this legislative session for 2018 or 2019, what type of guarantee can the department give us that the LARS system implementation will absolutely for sure happen by the dates that you just said?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, the assurance I can give at this point is that the project's in a very healthy state. We're on track to deliver the motor vehicle functionality by the end of this year. So the assurance that you can have today is that the project is in a very healthy state. And we have a very coordinated and sophisticated effort that we're working on to be able to make sure we can deliver the functionality at the end of this year. We've put a tremendous amount of planning and effort, primarily because there is some motor vehicle statutory language that we need to meet. And you can be assured that the department will do its best and exceed your expectations on what we need to do to deliver MnLARS driver services.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the testifier, so even with the healthy state, is it possible that something unforeseen could happen with the implementation of the system, or there's some delay beyond the control of the department that could impact the implementation of Real ID after LARS is completed, which could have an impact with the 2020 or the 2018 dates for so our residents can fly commercially with a license? Is that possible?
Ms. Olson.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, that's always a possibility. But we do our best to manage the risks and issues that are associated with that project and track it very closely. But, you know, something to happen is always a potential.
Representative Smith.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Hausman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just in case the public is paying attention to the discussion this morning, I thought, given the fact that there have been some observations about how we're spending taxpayer money, I thought it would be helpful to remind people that the departments are not advocating for any of the options. You're answering questions you were asked, but at this point you've made a report and you're not advocating for any of the options in terms of how we spend money.
Commissioner Dolman.
Madam Chair and Representative Hausman and members, yep, that is correct. We wanted to provide you with the most comprehensive list of items that you can consider and within those options as you decide to move forward.
Representative Joskowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciated, Madam Chair, your discussion about taking the enhanced ID and making it more widely available. And I had the same thought. Is it Deputy Commissioner Olson? Oh, well, I could say that for the day, right? Okay. So, Director Olson, I would suspect, as we look at economy of scale here and we see more enhanced IDs used, if that was the approach we used and the printing press worked a little faster, we would actually see some economies of scale and might suspect, at least in a normal environment, those costs to go down rather than up. But the one area that might be at least initial cost would be the rollout of or the expansion of the number of offices through which it is made available. Can you tell us what are there any costs with that what you might suspect? How many offices are there total in the state? How many do we have it enhanced ID in now? What would you suspect in time frame in order to make that happen?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, we have 128 DL agent offices. We currently provide enhanced driver's license services at 14 offices in the state. As to more of the specifics of the rollout and what that would entail, I would just need some more time to think about that a little bit more thoroughly.
Representative Joskowski?
Thank you, Ms. Olson. Madam Chair, just one last question. Ms. Olson and Commissioner, I have a list of what are TSA acceptable documents for flying, and expounding on Representative Anderson's discussion. Currently, a driver's license or other state photo identity card issued by the Department of Motor Vehicles, and that's kind of the one we're talking about here, also included. So my question is going to be, is this accurate or not? Or DHS designated enhanced driver's license, U.S. passport or passport card, DHS trusted traveler cards, and maybe that's the one that our pilot has in his wallet, Global Entry, Nexus, Sentry, FAST are examples of that, U.S. military ID, active duty or retired military and their dependents, and DOD civilians, permanent resident card, border crossing card, airline or airline airport issued ID, federally recognized tribal issued photo ID, HSPD-12 PIV card, I don't know what that is, foreign government issued passport, Canadian provincial driver's license or Indian and Northern Affairs Canada card, and transportation worker identification credentials. Ms. Olson, were there any on that list that you that you would suggest are not items that you can use in order to gain acceptance to the airplane?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, for boarding an airplane, no. There's nothing on there that would be prohibitive.
So those would all work?
It's a TSA website. If that's what they posted, then I guess that's what I would have to agree with.
Okay.
Representative Drozdowski.
Thank you, Ms. Olson, Commissioner, and Madam Chair.
C. Johnson, Representative C. Johnson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm listening to this, and I'm reflecting on what I'm hearing from my neighbors, and I think what they want, what I hear my neighbors want, is the assurance that they can use their driver's license to get on an airplane. In many ways, more importantly, get on a military base to see their kids, get into federal offices. They want convenience in getting the new license, whatever it is. And they really want kind of a most timely resolution to this challenge that we're facing the state. Can you help me understand which of these options that you're talking about that would be best at providing that assurance, the convenience, and a timely resolution?
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, do you mean the implementation dates? Is that what you're asking about?
Well, and approaches. There's dates here. There's also appears to be different approaches that are being suggested in the committee.
Ms. Olson?
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I wouldn't want to speak specifically to approaches at this time, only because of, you know, the limited amount of information I have about this. But I would be more than happy to provide you some more detail around that, specifically around your questions of convenience, time resolution, and
Johnson. Fundamentally, they just want assurance that their driver's license that they get normally. I think what my neighbors are asking for is that let's just make this a process that we normally go through. We all get our driver's license. I want my driver's license to be able to, so I get on an airplane and go see my kid in an airbase and that sort of thing. And so I guess what I'm seeking is, what is the approach? Some help in deciphering out of these, several options, what is convenient for Minnesotans? But fundamentally, we'll assure that just the old driver's license that you normally get can get on an airplane. So, thank you.
Olson? Okay, Representative Whalen. Did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Actually, I didn't, but I'm happy to make a couple comments. There, several of my colleagues have already alluded to some of the concerning things we're facing here, and I just wanted to echo some of those. To Representative Drozdowski's comments that we have the enhanced ID that's, for all practical purposes, Real ID compliant other than the AMVA. My suggestion or my comment would be, it would be great to get estimates on just making that, as I think Representative Scott said as well, AMVA compliant, and then just making sure that we inform all Minnesotans of the option that they would have. Because as to Representative Mark Anderson's comments as well, it's a little concerning to me that it feels like the federal government is almost coercing states to do something that really should be a states' rights issue. So for me, that's just kind of where, if the public is listening, that's kind of where I stand, and I'm happy to continue engaging in the conversation. But really appreciate all your work, especially with the really short timeline you had, just 2 weeks. So a lot of great information, and thank you for that.
Thank you. Representative Ryan Johnson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Olson, back in February, when we had the Real ID working group going, it was either January or February, I had asked what it would cost to implement the enhanced driver's license statewide. Is there any reason I haven't received that information yet?
Ms. Olson or Commissioner Dolman?
Madam Chair and members, I can't speak to that. I wasn't available at that time, but I can certainly meet with you after and find out exactly what kind of information you're looking for. I'd be happy to do that.
Because I'd ask
Representative Johnson.
Madam Chair, Ms. Holtz, I'd ask for that information so we could start planning and get an idea of what implementation of the Real ID would be. And I'm hoping that it was started and some of this information that we got in this packet was because of that as a way to get around the ban on even talking about it, so members of this legislature could have an idea what these costs would be. So it wouldn't that be just jam-packed into a 1 or 2 week time period to get that information. So hopefully we can get that information as well, because the enhanced driver's license works for a lot of things, and I'm hoping that it continues to work after the 2020 date. But because our driver's license has evolved over time, it's no longer just the driver's license, it's our identification. Because we have the driver's license, we have the state ID cards, so it's more than just the driver's license, it is our identification. And like Representative Clark Johnson stated, I'm also getting the concerns that unfortunately the federal government is forcing us to do things. But it's not just for getting on airplane, for getting past the TSA security area. I have a lot of people in my community that they have children and parents on military bases or work in federal buildings or federal installations. I also have people that work in my district that work at the nuclear power plant. And they have to have the enhanced driver's license right now in order to get into these facilities without that having more documentation carrying with them all the time. And I have people in my area that do go out to Washington, D.C. to see their congressmen and their senators, and they have trouble getting into some of the buildings out there without the enhanced driver's license or their passport and stuff that with. So this is something that we do need to look at, but we need the proper information, and I'm hoping that we can get that proper information as soon as possible so we can look at what's best for the state and for our people.
Thank you, Representative Johnson. I don't have any other members on the list. I thought that we might have time for some public testimony, but we don't, but I know that whatever bills come forward as a result of this discussion that will come through the civil law and the transportation committees, so I look forward to more to get public comment at that time. I do want to ask one question before we adjourn today, and that is, have you been asked to report to the Senate yet? Do you have a hearing set up over there? Commissioner Dolman.
Madam Chair, we are going to be meeting with them on Monday. I think 2:30 or 2 o'clock.
Okay, great. Okay. So both bodies will have had a discussion with you. Very good. Seeing no other member questions and the time being right on the dot here at 11 a.m. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you for rushing through and getting the report ready, and we look forward to some of the answers to some of the questions we had. Thank you. We're adjourned.